everyone. Welcome to an official podcast. My name is Oleg Sapishchuk.
And I am Peter Schmoffel.
Today we are going to talk about headless, about PWA, about managed runtime, composable commerce, all those buzz and not buzzwords that are trending as of today in e-commerce space. Everyone talks about it, but not everyone have full confidence to understand what it's all about, right? Some people think about different vendors, and we Salesforce guys, I mean Salesforce ecosystem guys, we have a great offering for the market. And today we are lucky enough to have Drew Law, our guest. Drew, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Great time to be on this.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Drew, what are you doing? Like, I mean, you're a Salesforce guy, right? But how you actually came up with the Salesforce and what are you doing today?
So yeah, I've been at Salesforce officially 1 year now, just past 1 year, which is kind of crazy to think about it because it's been 1 year during a pandemic where I haven't met anyone in person. But about a year ago, we closed the acquisition where Salesforce acquired Mobify, which is where I'm from. We're an independent software vendor, long-time Commerce Cloud partner, where we had a separate, what we called a front-end service offering. So I led the product team there. I was our VP of products. And I was building front ends on top of all the various Commerce Cloud APIs as a platform. And before that, I was working on headless commerce probably before the term existed. I was at another commerce vendor a long time ago called ElasticPath. If you run into them, they're also an API first platform. And I led product there as well as I led architecture there for a little bit during the initial conception of some of the API technologies that was the basis of the ElasticPath platform. So probably 14, 15 years in the so-called headless commerce space. Again, before the term actually existed, probably.
So how would you do the best describe yourself in terms of the hats that you had? It's like more like product owner, architect, or business owner?
I do come mainly from a technical background originally. I was a software developer on the services side for the longest time. And then I ended up becoming a solution architect for many years for a lot of kind of API first projects. And then that led me into the wonderful world of pre-sales. So I was a sales engineer for the longest time, trying to figure out how to structure deals and convince people that technology-wise, APIs are sound, you should build a wonderful API-first architecture. Then I realized some of these platforms aren't ready for that. They have a couple gaps in the APIs. Maybe we should fix that first out of product. So I ended up becoming a product manager kind of by accident, which is the case for a lot of product managers. And that led me just into many years of just managing product teams. And trying to build really cool solutions and products on top of APIs.
I got a question for I think some people may not know what headless actually means as far as a technology stack. So if you can, could you explain what headless is and then the difference between like how that's coupled with like more legacy stuff? I think that'd be useful.
Yeah, I think in hindsight that term headless commerce was like probably a bad term to go with. So if you translate it back to the normal world, it's pretty much just API first architecture, especially applied to commerce, which a lot of other products and solutions out there have been API first forever. It just so happened that if you think about e-commerce, we started e-commerce a long time ago when it was basically buying stuff on a really old desktop browser, whether that was like, you know, Internet Explorer, you know, I don't know, 8, or like some really old Netscape browser. The first conception of e-commerce was just buy it on a desktop browser, and it didn't really matter what other channels were. But as shoppers got more sophisticated, and as technologies and ecosystem, what contributes to e-commerce transaction became more complex, this kind of setup of having your front end and your back end coupled together in a single specific application, a so-called monolithic architecture, wasn't really going to grow that well. And that's what we've seen the last couple of years as more and more retailers and companies want to go meet where their shopper is going, whether that's on like social commerce or their native apps or to spin up like a microsite that people want to interact with. That's where like, you know, if you didn't really focus on APIs before, you are no longer ready for this next wave of shopper interactions. And so the whole point of headless commerce and a really API first strategy is to get ready for that or stay ahead of your shoppers in terms of where they're going and be able to iterate on all your shopper experiences really quickly, which if you really were having your front end and back end being combined together in a monolithic app, you can't really iterate on that very quickly. You can't easily add on additional channels and experiences beyond your web one. So that's where, you know, we're trying to go evolve past that previous generation of the storefront being completely attached to the backend functionality. We're trying to separate those ones. So for future, we can just go faster going forward.
Okay, so if I understand it correctly, it means that as far as my platform expose the APIs, sufficient APIs, I can build my Headless experience. Is it correct?
So we talk about it in terms of like a bit of a spectrum of Headless Commerce. Like on the most simplest side of Headless Commerce, you might just add on a native app which calls the APIs, which is kind of sitting beside your existing storefront. So you can imagine you have a SFRA-based storefront already. You build a native app against, say, the Okapi APIs. You are technically partially headless. So cool, you're partway there. On the far end of the spectrum, you may want to have everything over APIs. You might use PWAkits to build your storefront. You might use your own native app platform. And you might also call a bunch of headless vendors, like a headless CMS. You might call in a bunch of your own microservices you built yourself. And everything is kind of orchestrated via APIs. And that's kind of the far end of the spectrum where you have like a lot of different services all put together and orchestrated via APIs and then represented in multiple front ends, including a web front end like ours. So that's kind of the spectrum we see of headless. It's not just like one or the other. It's really like how far you can adopt APIs as part of your various experiences and how can you gradually get there.
Okay, so if I understood it correctly, like just confirm it, please. We are talking about headless maturity, right? So
correct. Yeah.
Headless experience can be starting from very simple stuff, just trying to use simple APIs, even for the piece of functionality, not even the full application, just some piece of functionality. It's just like very the lowest, but it's already some headless experience. And then we can get more mature and mature. And this actually hits me a bit. It's contradicting with some rumors that I heard on the internet, like some vendors, some service providers, they usually say, oh, you have to be we are microservice headless first. This is a true headless experience that you can go with, like, and it's kind of against what we just discussed, because you don't have to use all the fully microservice based headless experience to actually start your headless journey, right? You can start with baby steps. Is it correct?
Yeah, I would buy into that. Like, yeah, I get it that microservices are really cool and they're a nice fad, and it'd be cool to say everything's a microservice and it doesn't really matter, you're calling to the latest technologies and do that. Same time, like, you're using a bunch of different SaaS services. So does it really matter if it's all built as microservices or not behind the scenes? As long as the APIs have been designed well, the domain design behind them have been broken up in a way that makes it so you can use these APIs independently if you so want. Doesn't matter if it's backed by one single service or multiple services. And if you really think about microservices, the granularity of the services really matter. So how you break them up really matters. So for us, a cart service, versus say a search service versus a promotion, you know, engine. Is that one big thing, one macro service? Is it a smaller service? I think there's a kind of a macro micro level to these things, which is very nuanced. So definitely, if you think about the center of gravity of what is an e-commerce transaction in a site, you're probably not going to start swapping out your catalog service, your pricing service very much. Definitely, you may swap out your taxes and your, you know, product reviews, because those are smaller services bolted on to the side. But it's not really your center of gravity of what is like the main goal of your e-commerce system. So like, even if your cart and your promotions were microservices, would you really swap those out and kind of connect something else in the middle? Or would you really want all that to go together anyways? So from an API headless point of view, I find them kind of orthogonal. They don't have to be directly connected. You don't have to be headless and microservices. It is, you know, good to get there at some points. But it's not necessary to go down the headless route by having everything microservice right away.
So for somebody who might be considering going headless, I guess, are there some natural pros and cons that people run into for migrating from something into headless, or that maybe it's better for them to not do it?
Yeah, I think that's what we want to be very clear on, in that like going down the headless route and essentially you're adding another layer to your architecture, right? you're adding a new experience layer on top of the API layer. That does get more complex. You just don't get the same kind of simplification of you get if everything was like kind of one single monolithic application. So your team has to kind of be prepared for that. It is a bit of a con in the sense that it's more complex and how you figure out like if something goes wrong in a architecture that has an additional layer on top is now a bit harder to resolve. Like, you know, my site is slow. How do I know if it's the front end layer or the API layer or the services layer or something in between, some cache in between? Like, now you have to go figure out like what that is compared to trying to debug something like that on a more simpler application and architecture. Your team has to be ready for that. So have you prepared yourself to go look at resolving issues that may fall in different application layers now? And if so, cool, you're probably good in that one. The pros of this is you should be able to go iterate faster as a team and deliver more results. And that's something I'm most interested in is like, you know, if we can properly split out the front end from the APIs and from the back end, your front end team should be able to go deliver more deployments more frequently and be able to go experiment and see what works for shoppers, what bumps the, you know, various KPIs and metrics you're interested in. And they don't have to go wait for another deployment cycle or wait for another team to go deliver something. And that's kind of what I see with all teams who go through that have this transition is they kind of get more confident about how often they deploy and what experience they can run so they can control what they can control. So one of the customers I worked with for many years prior to joining Salesforce, they're pretty much old school waterfall. They might deploy, you know, once every 2 months, once every 3 months. If you think about your chance of increasing how much business your team does and how you hit your business goals, if you can only deploy your changes like 6 times a year, do you really give yourself a chance to go really achieve your business goals? Like we all do agile nowadays because we want to deploy as often as possible and see what works and be able to go learn from things and iterate. That's kind of what I believe is the value of headless is kind of an extension of your agile transformation already. And that gives your front end teams now the ability to go deploy every day and see, oh, my one tweak to my product detail page or my checkout page has resulted in a, you know, a 0.2% uplift in conversion rate. How do I combine that together with all my other changes? And all of a sudden I'm now, you know, a couple percentile points ahead of plan because I was able to find out that this new flow of user experience is a lot better for shoppers versus this old flow. And if you can only deploy, I don't know, once a month, you're not really get that chance to iterate and experiment. So that's, for me, the main benefit for front-end teams is, cool, I can be a lot more in control of what I can do to contribute back to my business.
Yeah, I think that's an important point you make, too, that the team structure seems is something a lot of people, I don't think, consider when this change happens. Because that if you don't have the appropriate staff to do more heavy front-end, then that's a consideration your business would need to make for sure. Because if your current structure is set up where you're used to having what you've got, then you know things are going to change a bit. So, but it's also good for companies that have a lot stronger front end teams that do want to do more regular deployments, exactly like you said. But that is an aspect of that I think is good to consider.
Yeah, I think you also bring up a good point in that. Like, I think that the team structure also changes. Like before, I was used to seeing like here's a desktop team, here's a mobile team. And you kind of work on things separately. With more of a headless commerce app, at least for the front end, usually you'll kind of slice things kind of more vertically. Now I have like a checkout team or a search team, and they're the optimized experience across all different experiences, you know, search on mobile and native app and desktop. And so when you orient it that way, now you have a product manager and a designer and engineering team who specialize in front end iterating on just the search piece all the time. And they're independent of like the other team that's working on checkout. And so you get a lot more, I guess, parallel of activities to go find out what works more. And you get teams who can better measure the metrics they actually care about versus slicing based on device types or other ways of organizing teams.
This actually hits me with Spotify model when they had tribes and squads, right? You actually can have your commerce tribe. And in that commerce tribe, you would have like different squads. One could be, I don't know, journey based, right? Experience based. Maybe one fully focused on one experience, and they deploying, they thinking about the features, they experimenting, right, and deploying together with the other squads in those tribes. And because of the headless, because of this DevOps culture, right, you are able to innovate and deploy more faster. This is cool. And one another thing, yeah. I just want to support the stuff that you mentioned about that it's really changed the teams. I've seen that. If you look on the enterprise structure, you can already predict the architecture that a company is following, because usually technology back up the business, right? So if you are changing the technology, and as for me, this is a big change from monolith to going full headless, if you're not taking the smooth steps, right? And that's actually the question I will have right after this point. But I wanted to support the idea that it's not only about changing technology. It's about the way how you actually operate the business, how you structure your team and how you do the stuff. And you might, like, if you think, if customer think about the headless, I would say the first thing they need to, I don't know, pay attention is, like, it's not just technology. You might easily fail with keeping the same structure, the same mindset, and just thinking you are just changing from monolith to the headless. And in the end, if you are not able to run successful monolith, who said you will be able to run the successful headless, right? It will be even more complex.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so, like, before you make that transition, like, you should, as a software development org, because really that's really what all our companies are turning into, is just really good at being software development orgs. You have to figure out, like, what should I measure so I know if I improve my performance as an organization before and after. So a book, if I could recommend one, I don't know if you do that on this podcast or not, but my favorite book around this topic is Accelerate, The Science of Lean Software and DevOps. It is written by a bunch of super smart people that are PhDs who are way smarter than I am. They used to be called an independent group called DORA. They did this, like, highly academic study that showed of all the various factors that contribute to teams who outperform their peers as an elite software org. It came down to four specific metrics. And when I talk about headless and I talk about these metrics, they're kind of the same four metrics. It's like, how often do you deploy? How much time does it take to go from your first commit to deploying to production? If you do run into an error, how long does it take for you to go recover from that error? And what is your failure rate of changes? So if you can measure all four things, doesn't matter if you're headless or not, you will know if you're, like, an elite team or not. And if you are an elite team, their like, highly academic study shows that you will exceed your business goals 2.5 times more than the other teams who are not elite. And so this book is actually really interesting that they have all these different metrics they try to measure of what makes and does not make a really good software delivery organization. Architecture plays a big role. So API first, headless commerce, that's a big factor. But what they also realized was people in retail, companies in retail, teams in retail like us, a lot of us are in retail, they actually scored really well from an elite team perspective because there's so much pressure on retail to do better from a DevOps and automation and just, like, you know, a velocity perspective, that retail teams were actually really good already in terms of their scores, but other industries not so much. So if you really want to get into the numbers and the metrics and a lot of the math, that book and the study they do every year, which is called The State of DevOps, is amazing to think about how headless might apply to the metrics that matter for you as a software.
So Drew, I'm curious if you, so you've been doing this a long time too. So we talked before the show about my background being more like in mobile application and just regular application before I got into Salesforce. And it seems almost like this headless e-commerce is kind of like a natural progression of just modern web development catching up to the e-commerce world. And even just, I'm seeing that kind of organically in like systems integrations teams. It seems like a lot of the companies that were more heavily hiring, you know, specific platform engineers in the background are seemingly adopting more front-end specific people and being willing to train them more on the platform. So it's like it's switching priorities a bit. So I wonder if you're seeing that too, or what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to observe. You know, a lot of in the tech space, like a lot of the companies that have done so well as a platform perspective, like the Amazons of the world, have like always had like a API first mandate. Like you have to produce APIs so that other teams can use what you built. And companies that haven't really followed that approach as well have fallen behind. And so I think we're seeing the same thing in that if you've invested in APIs and reuse of your business functionality, business logic across as many teams as possible, which is really, like in our case, we want front-end teams to use a lot of the logic we created for the back-end side, but make it easy so that you don't have to understand all the nuances of, say, your checkout process. Cool, that makes your front-end team a lot better. They can all of a sudden go faster because they don't have to worry about all the rules behind the API, so you've kind of abstracted them away from a lot of the complexity. And that makes them ability to focus as a front-end team, but also they can then realize, I can apply the same thing to my social commerce stream or my native app stream, and all of a sudden you can now have a mix of very consistent experiences across the board. Whereas in the past, like, I think we'd be scared to be like, oh, how do I make this feature rollout on 3 different front ends at once? Like, I'm going to spend a year on that. I don't want to do that.
Drew, what Salesforce has to offer for headless? I mean, you've been working for the year, even more, right? With the new offering that just recently went with the public GA, right? So what is all about? What is this PWA for those who never heard about it? And what is the managed runtime?
Yeah, so we released two new features. They are kind of a re-release of the Molify platform for specifically for Commerce Cloud. So there's two halves to this. PWA kit is our short for Progressive Web App Kit. It is a starting point for developers to create a new storefront experience against the existing Commerce Cloud APIs. So you could use the Open Commerce APIs. You could use the new the Commerce APIs with really for the shopper APIs specifically. And the PWA kit is an open source project that's supposed to appeal to modern web developers. So if you are a React developer and you've done a lot of React, even outside of Commerce Cloud, you've done it on other projects, we want you to be feeling productive and familiar with the development environments within the first 10, 20 minutes. And that makes sense, right? A Node.js React project is a Node.js React project. It shouldn't feel any different, even if you're doing something on Commerce Cloud or not. So that's our goal, is to give you a full-fledged storefront experience. You can start branding and adjusting to meet your needs. And it's pre-integrated into the core APIs that we need to do a full shopper experience. But once you start that, you want to deploy that somewhere. And so that's always been the hard part about headless, is if you go headless and you build your own storefront, someone has to operate that thing. And operating that is, for larger orgs, really good. They might have their own public cloud team with a bunch of AWS and GCP investments, and they have teams that are really good at monitoring that and keeping it up and stuff. For a lot of customers, though, they don't have that team size where they can have 100 people doing DevOps and site reliability engineering and so on. So in our case, we want to provide what's called a managed runtime, so that once you start building your storefront that is headless, you can deploy it somewhere and Salesforce will go manage that for you, hence why it's called managed runtime. So we wanted to make sure we handle all things security and uptime around that, and things like auto scaling for holiday season, and applying all the latest security patches. That's all kind of the boring stuff behind the scenes that Salesforce does really well. And we'd rather have your team work on the fun front-end stuff of how to create a really cool shopper experience or make cool 3D rotating products and stuff versus patch a server for the 10th time this month because somebody forgot to fix some vulnerability deep down in stack. So I'd rather you have Salesforce manage that piece because we're good at it, and your team can focus on things closer to your actual user, i.e. the shopper.
So,
sorry, Ola. I had a follow-up question for that. So I'm curious how the continuous integration process works for these PWAs that you're using for your managed stuff. From the time that somebody actually has deployment, obviously they could roll out a lot faster now that they wanted to, because they could do multiple deployments at this point rather than usually, in the normal processes. What does that look like for what you've got set up?
In terms of how users of PWA kit are just shipping.
Yeah, if you're switching over to headless and then you're now a developer for you got different front end needs and you can now have different deployment processes in place too. So if you guys have this set up for customers that they can just do deployments, I'm just curious what an actual what people can expect from get from the code to having it end up on a server.
Yeah, so as you can imagine, your front end code is now for example based in React and PWA kit. It could be on something else. We have a bunch of other partners that offer Vue based front ends and so on, but it doesn't really matter. Your front end team will have its own front end code base. It's in its own GitHub repo, and you will set up your own CI system of your own choice, and you will deploy that to the managed runtime whenever a build completes. So first thing we usually see on projects is set up a CI system. Of which we really expect you to use your own CI system so you can go call our APIs to go kind of deploy code. And that will just happen continuously. At that point, your team has to choose, am I going to continuously deploy this into production, which I'll be honest, isn't quite as often as we see, versus we still want to go through the normal QA cycle, UAT process before it ships. So it kind of depends on your comfort level. But at a minimum, we expect that every build that you do build on your development branches ends up in an environment in managed runtime automatically deployed. And then from there, you can just choose to promote it to production. And that is a 60-second exercise based on the same build there. So we try to follow the same kind of 12-factor paradigm where the code is the code. It doesn't matter how different it is. It's not going to be different per environment. It's really your environment settings and your environment itself that differs. So you can trust that if you test it on staging and you promote it to production, that same code goes live. What will be different, though, is your backend changes, which is like, you know, you normally would have deployed things to a certain pod, the cartridge and so on, and wait for that to replicate out to you know your next environment, your into production and so on. That remains the same, except that there's no UI code attached to that anymore. So sometimes you may have to time different deployments. Your backend team might have to deploy to staging while your front end deploys the same thing, verify the test, and then coordinate a deployment out there. And so the important part there is your front end and your API changes need to be backwards compatible, so that even if you deploy your backend early, your front end isn't ready to consume the new changes. Can you build it defensively in a way that if it doesn't recognize, you know, the new feature, it still performs until you do the front end deployment and vice versa? So the good thing is API contracts are like fairly well robust at this point in terms of how to make sure you don't break APIs. And the front end coding gets a bit more defensive in that it's checking if certain things should happen or not based on like what API is responding to. So it's good in that your API contracts will help you guarantee if certain features should be shown to the shopper or not. But you just have to adjust to that paradigm in that it's not one single point anymore. So therefore, your code should adjust for that in that maybe your APIs are one version back, or you know, you haven't actually shipped that last thing to production. How does your front end code actually accommodate for that?
From people skill perspective, what I hear is right now, customers will be able not only hire only commerce cloud experience people, right? But now, if I am React developer who has even, I could not even have experience in e-commerce. Maybe I have, but let's say I'm just JavaScript React developer. I can go now and work on with such customers, right? Because I can go and help them build their headless experiences. And now we don't have this, I can't call it a bottleneck, but let's say it's like knowledge gap, knowledge dependency to be trained on Commerce Cloud. Right now, customers will have like much bigger access to smart minds all over the world that can help them innovate, build new experiences. Is this correct assumption?
Yeah, so we wanted to pick like open source frameworks that had large ecosystems and large developer communities already. And there's a couple reasons for that one. Like hiring definitely is a big one. We definitely see a lot of teams like, I can't hire enough developers. And like when I do find an SFRA trained developer, a site genesis trained developer, they get snatched up really quick. They're highly in demand, which is great for this ecosystem, but not so great if you're the team trying to build a team around this. So in our case, cool. There's a lot of React developers out there. There's tons of them. And they're all amazing. So like, why can't you just hire them onto your team to augment your core team for a couple months if you need to? And that also opens up a wide spectrum of new agencies and SIs who know React very well, but may be starting to dabble a bit in Commerce Cloud. So that gives our customers a bit more choice of how can I pick a team or mix and match teams all of a sudden to go work on this project? Whereas before you needed one single partner just to do a Commerce Cloud side. Now we're seeing some customers have like a front end team from an agency that is smaller and maybe not a certified Commerce Cloud customer, but they're just a React shop combined with a certified Commerce Cloud partner that can do the bulk of the work. But they kind of combine forces with kind of a smaller React-based agency to go get the best of both worlds. And I would say the same thing happens on the ISV side, which is interesting. So in the ecosystem world, like before, to build a Link cartridge, you'd have to go get certified to go building cartridges. In this new world, though, like if you want to build an integration with PWAKits, you just kind of ship a node module to NPM that works with React, and that kind of is most of it. So, and like we build integration into, I don't know, some third-party service. Why can't we just share that with the React ecosystem? Like there's nothing very Commerce Cloud specific to an integration into, say, a product review provider or a Google tag manager for like the 10th time. Like that should just be all open source React ecosystem stuff we can all share, regardless if you're using Commerce Cloud as your e-commerce platform or you're building a React app for something completely different than commerce. Like we should all share all this anyway. So that to me is kind of the power of the React ecosystem is there's a lot out there already. We don't have to rebuild everything from scratch. And there's a lot of very experienced developers that we can go plug into projects as we go.
Let's say I'm a partner or I'm ISV, right? Any of them. Where I should go if I want to learn more about PWA? Or maybe I want, you know, partner with Salesforce and do some stuff. Maybe I want to be PWA partner. I want to also make implementations. Or let's say I am one man company ISV partner who has amazing idea, you know, and I want to like build something and make it available for the market. So what's your recommendation? Where should go
Yeah, so right now everything is on our Commerce Cloud Developer Center. So if you go to developer.commercecloud.com, all our docs are intentionally in the open. There's also a link there to our GitHub repo. As I mentioned, our PDA kit is open source. So you can see all the code there. You can follow our docs to kind of get everything set up locally as a local development environment. And then if you want to get more involved, come join us on the open source community. That's number one. We'd love to see more contributors and more feedback. But number two, our alliances team runs SI partner training for developers roughly every 6 weeks. So there's a new cohort that starts every 6 weeks you can sign up for. And so we'd be happy to include you in those kind of more, right now it's remote, but instructor-led training courses so that you can kind of get through the initial setup process and also into a couple exercises that show typical adjustments to your PDA kit projects. And you also get familiar with a lot of the underlying Commerce Cloud APIs if you haven't used them before. So that's offered to all kind of partners in the Commerce Cloud world. And there's limited seating, so you should definitely sign up for that if you're interested in getting a bit more hands-on.
Yeah, and just one marketing pitch. Sorry, Peter, just one thing. One marketing pitch from my side. I was part of this training, as you know, internal Salesforce template, and I might say it's a good one, guys. It really was nice stuff, you know, to get in touch, try to install it, feel the solution. And it was, I don't know, like a fresh air of, I don't know, the technology you used to work before. And now, like, you, I don't know, I'm just recommending. Peter.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have a couple of clients that have already switched over to just making custom stuff. And then it's just the ability to kind of take what's in somebody's head, especially, you know, businesses want to stand out. So they've got the ability now to, like, take their own custom like approach to the e-commerce world and still take advantage of the platform that they love, you know. So it's kind of like a win-win. We've been kind of dancing around something that I believe actually has a definition. So that a composable commerce, as far as things being modular. So I wanted to know if you could kind of like talk about that and its relationship to obviously the headless e-commerce stuff.
Yeah. So composable commerce like really makes sense if all the different vendors in the space and all the solutions like offer APIs, which is really what headless commerce is about. I think that's why composable commerce itself has picked up a lot of momentum, because it offers flexibility and choice to customers who can then say, oh yeah, conceptually I can swap out, you know, parts of my overall solution for other vendors because everyone has APIs and it should theoretically make things easy to swap out. So in that case, I'm not really tied to a single vendor. I can be more in control of my own destiny. And you know, that's I get the appeal of that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you think about Commerce Cloud, like, we've had a large ecosystem forever on the link side, which is really composable commerce to probably a smaller degree, in that, yeah, I'm gonna go plug in my own tax provider, my own payment provider, you know, my own CMS system and so on. Like, that's been happening on the Commerce Cloud world for a while. It's just that we picked up in this composable commerce buzzword and essentially just kind of made it a couple levels deeper of like how much could be composable. If you think about it in the Commerce Cloud Salesforce world though, and really if you zoom out and think about this for any larger portfolio products like Salesforce, we have multiple clouds, multiple products. Composable commerce is slightly different with the Salesforce ecosystem, mainly because you kind of have everything pre-composed for the most part. You have your core Commerce Cloud put together with you know, all the different services already for like recommendations, and you can plug it into Marketing Cloud, you can plug it into OMS and so on. So like what would be discrete components to be a part of the composable commerce is already stitched together for you as a starting point. So that's in contrast to other vendors who want to go do composable commerce and say you have to go build more of that upfront. And there's gonna be like more vendors in the mix because, you know, compared to Salesforce, which has a lot more products that you can offer, these smaller vendors have to combine forces with kind of an alliance of like, you know, five or six other vendors that have the equivalent to what Salesforce Commerce Cloud has. So again, there's, I don't think there's any good or bad thing about that model. It's just a kind of conscious choice of what works for your business. Am I okay stitching together five or six vendors and having to call up, you know, several vendors if I have a support case, an issue that I have live in production? How do I go figure out whose problem it is? Versus can I call Salesforce with one single call and be like, okay, you figure it out, because it's all part of your product, even though it's maybe coming from, you know, five or six different clouds and product lines. At least your support team will go figure out for me what's wrong with this. And that's kind of the pros and cons of how far you take composable commerce. I think if you talk to us, we will still say we have composable commerce. It just means we've pre-composed more of it up front, so that hopefully you don't have to make as many harder decisions of what you pull out and pull in, because we believe we have a best-in-class combination of things.
It's like we at Salesforce, we save you money and letting you focus on the value instead of like cars and other stuff, right? This is good. Question in terms of moving to the headless then in this way. Let's say I'm an existing customer, or let's potentially think about personas, existing customer. I could be on pipeline, side genesis, SFRI, other stuff. What, in your opinion, would be the most optimal evolution way to get to this mature headless? Is it, I don't know, build mobile app, try to build mobile app, or maybe run separate digital channel with PWA, or maybe, I don't know, just run one page with PWA? Or what would be the recommended path of evolution?
Yeah, we've laid out kind of three different approaches you could take, again, depending on your business needs and context. So we've talked about initially kind of a more of a device type rollout. So you talked about there, like, can I roll out a native app first? And I think if you have a shopper need for that, and native apps is another whole podcast I think we could probably talk about in itself. But if you are rolling out a native app, cool. That will flex and kind of validate your APIs are set up correctly and doing what you expect. And as I mentioned, like, that's probably like one part of the head of the spectrum is I am using my APIs for one of my touch points, and I can guarantee my APIs are working the way I expect. And so that will make your next API connected experience, whether that's PWA kit or, you know, an in-store kiosk or something else, that will go much smoother because you've already sorted out all the APIs from the native app side. So that's why the device type kind of rollout makes a lot of sense if you have that need. We've also talked about how to de-risk projects that are going headless. So we've also talked about like a regional rollout. And I say that because I'm based in Canada. And usually what happens is either New Zealand or Canada gets to be kind of the test market for kind of major technology changes. So if you want to, you can roll out headless commerce just to Canada or New Zealand, because we're both friendly English-speaking countries who don't complain too much. And you could validate that your headless commerce architecture works for a smaller market that's lower risk. And then if that goes really well, roll out to the rest of your world. And so that's definitely a model that we've seen a lot of customers follow. The one that we're going to be supporting a lot better will be, as you mentioned, kind of a incremental rollout strategy. So we're calling this hybrid deployments. If you are an existing customer and you have a site genesis or SFRA site, how can I gradually adopt headless? That is something more forward-looking, I think we will get a chance to talk about that in the future as we finish off a couple of roadmap items, but definitely is a kind of a lower risk approach where you can gradually become headless over time that we're interested in supporting, because that de-risks the big bang project that will let you try out headless and PWA kit on a subset of your site. And if it goes well, cool, you can then choose to roll out other areas of your site. So in that case, you can imagine, like, you know what, I like my cart and checkout on SFRA. It works well for me. I don't really adjust it very often, so maybe it won't get the full benefits of headless because I don't change my checkout every day. But I do when I go try it out on my landing pages a bit more. So, like, you can imagine a world where your homepage and your listing pages, your campaign pages are running on a headless kind of front end, but you keep your cart and checkout on your existing site gen or SFRA site until things stabilize, and then you could do the migration of the rest of the site later on.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm already imagining those marketing merchandising team. They want to innovate, they want to try, they want to do more A/B testing, and this is where they leverage the most, right? Those home pages, CLP pages, campaign pages, those static content pages, other stuff. Yeah, good one.
So Oleg, actually, you touched exactly on what I was going to ask next, the A/B testing, because it seems like that's something that's already built into Salesforce and you're switching over into headless. Like, is there how does that work? I guess you're like, if I got making my own progressive web app and I need to now build my own like A/B testing support into that, or can I still take advantage of?
So I think you do, Peter, you touched on a good point in that even at Salesforce, the headless commerce journey is still a journey. Like, not every single feature is I would consider headless enabled just yet. And there's a lot of details and nuance around there. I'm happy to guide teams on, like, you know, what is supported and what isn't supported as you go headless. Your example is one of them, where the A/B testing feature that's baked into, you know, SFRA and the front ends that are connected directly to the rest of the platform aren't really like suited for headless just yet. Like, there aren't really APIs we can call and say, oh yeah, tell me which A/B testing bucket I fall into and which one it is, and how can I track the metrics that show which one is statistically relevant after a certain time period. So that is one of the factors you have to consider. You go ahead this commerce right now, you probably have to, instead of using the built-in A/B testing tools, go use a third-party A/B testing vendor that has APIs already, which, you know, may work for you already. A lot of our customers we see are using, like, you know, some third-party tool like Optimizely and so on. But they will use Salesforce's A/B testing features for, I would say, simpler A/B testing scenarios, because, you know, it's there for that. So yeah, that's a business choice you have to make. Is my goal to go ahead this worth also considering that I may have to go pull in another vendor for something that hasn't been enabled by Salesforce yet for the A/B testing side?
All right, I had one more question for you. we talked about the, you know, future a bit of some of this stuff. You're touching on it a bit. I'm curious, you've been doing this for like 10 years now. Do you see like kind of a trend of like where headless and even maybe the future, something, a version of where all this is going to be going in like 10 years from now, like kind of predicting like how all this is going to pan out? I'd be curious of your insight on that.
Yeah, if you knew how what it would pan out in 10 years now, I'd probably be retired and living on an island by now. But that's kind of the hard part about product, is it's kind of hard to predict the future a little bit. But I think there's a couple of things we can like just know or kind of stable things to assume. Like front-end frameworks will come and go. Like I expect in 10 years time, React won't be popular anymore. We probably already can guarantee that. So I think that's why we have to make sure we build what we have in Commerce Cloud in a way that is eventually going to be a bit front-end framework agnostic. So for example, like, yeah, can you deploy any non-React, you know, application into managed runtime? Probably makes sense to do that because, you know, React may not be around long enough. And also beyond that, can we build a lot of the underlying SDKs in a way that can be reusable in any JavaScript application? So, if you decide to go down the Vue.js route or something else, can you still use a lot of the tools and built-in things that our kind of our developer experience team provides? But 10 years out is a long time away. Like if you look at like where people think the web are going, Web3, where everything will be running off blockchain, like what kind of world will be there in that point? I'm not even sure if you go think about like the Web3 kind of trend. So, but I think what we'll still see is APIs will still dominate. Doesn't matter if you're on blockchain backend or a standard kind of microservice. At that point, microservice might be no longer cool. Probably won't be in 10 years time because it's all blockchain. Either way, you still need an API on top, blockchain or microservice. And so your front end that you built probably 10 years ago probably still works against the same APIs. That's what I would love to see, is like, you know what? I made the right call going down the headless commerce route. I didn't have to go rip apart my front end, you know, 5 times in the last 10 years. I've been able to have some stability. My team's been able to iterate and actually complete a lot of their missions instead of being asked to go tackle something else on that track. And I think this can usher in a new period of kind of stability for teams where they actually can expect to be working on something for a longer time period because the APIs are stable and there's a kind of a more strict API contract in place that, you know, this API won't go away for a while. So I can be guaranteed my front end experience will stick around for that point.
I love this one. And it's more reflect me with the point that it's less about the goal, but more about the journey, right? It's about the journey to learn, to experiment. It's once again about agile DevOps, the headless, and whatever we can offer to our customers to achieve their goals, and also to provide new experiences for the customers. So if I'm tomorrow have super new digital fridge, right, with the screen, other stuff, I want to have that experience that I can go and buy some, I don't know, grocery over there just directly, right? And headless will actually allow me to provide this kind of channel as well.
Yeah, that's why I'm excited. Once we get past a certain point of headless commerce adoption, then like there's a little bit of explosion of experiments, like what other front ends can I try and then what will work and what won't work. Doesn't feel like we're quite there yet at the tipping point, but it's close. Definitely a lot closer now than it was a couple years ago.
Cool. Thank you, Drew. I love our discussion. We talked today a lot about headless, about composable commerce, about PWA and Salesforce offering. Peter, do you have any other questions? If not, I would love to give Drew his last prime time world. Words.
No, just to follow up on that question, I think the reason I was asking that is I 100% agree with you, Drew, that I think we're in a really weird transition where people haven't really come to like grips of like what headless can actually do for them and what it even means. I think we are going to see like over the next 10 years a lot of creative like just iterations of e-commerce just as a platform, even just period, like, well, what people can do with it. Because at that point, the power comes back down to the actual company to be innovative and to come up with their own solutions and stuff while still taking advantage of a platform like this. And I think that naturally then transitions the e-commerce world to actually come up with new innovative things that they would have never considered before. So this isn't necessarily just a tool for like people to, you know, like do their own stuff. It ends up being part of the build process for even just commerce or e-commerce period, in my opinion. So that's where I feel like in 10 years, yeah, the whole world of the e-commerce stuff is going to be innovated by the people, the actual companies who are driving commerce to begin with, because they'll have the creativity or the tools to be creative and to allow the customers to kind of dictate what they want to see out of e-commerce. And then I think that's just going to be like a lot more dynamic change than what we're seeing with heavy-handed like platforms being kind of controlling what people are able to do and what they can't do, and these other companies kind of building on top of that to say, well, we can help build custom cartridges and do all that. I think all of that is going to change over the next 10 years just because people will be able to roll their own solutions and integrate whatever the heck they want into their own business. And that's just going to change everything. It has to. I mean, that's just the way this stuff works. So yeah, thanks, Drew. That's all I had. I just wanted to follow up with that. So I appreciate
Thank you, Peter, as well. I feel that whoever listened to us agree with you as well with all this point. Drew, we usually allow our guests to have their kind of prime time where you can say your message to the community. So it's your time right now. What you would like to convey to community?
Yeah, as I think about like how we move our industry along and get to a tipping point of headless commerce and then unlock like a new wave of kind of innovation and kind of just cool things happening. I would say like encourage everyone who's listening, like, tell your story more. Like I see like the great thing about joining Salesforce is I see a lot of cool things going on. The not so great thing is like, I can't be involved in all of it. So I would say like, there's a power to the story of what you're working on and what you've achieved that I would say doesn't get talked about enough. Like I see so many cool projects going on and I wish we could like share more of that. So find a way to get permission to talk about what you're working on. And I think that will help us move away from just talking about this at a technical level, where like we gab on about APIs and headless commerce, but it's very technical oriented discussion. And this only makes sense if we can make our business peers also join in on this trend and then adopting like this for our actual end users. What works best is the stories come out and say, this is what made our team better. This is how we made our business better. This is how we made our end user experience better. And I could definitely use a lot more stories to listen to and talk about with you. Like, you know, come onto this podcast and tell your story, I would say is goal number one. And then if that goes really well, come and join us at Connections and Dreamforce and tell the same story a few more times. You can't go wrong with telling the same story at least 10 times over until everyone now recognizes it as cool. That's what we need to get to. And that will make it go a lot smoother when you're debating with your business peers. Should we invest in this or not?
I love it. Thank you, Drew. I mean, really, like, guys, if you listen to us, come to us. Write me or Peter. We are on LinkedIn. We are on an official community. I don't know. Whatever we are, we have one. If you are on the YouTube right now, you see just below over here and below this video. Oh, damn. I like talking like those YouTubers, you know, like streamers, like subscribe, like it. Anyway, I was just telling that. Come to us, speak with us. We want to hear your story. And we would love, you know, that everyone could learn from each other as well. So with that, Drew, thank you very much for this exciting discussion today about headless PWA and composable commerce. Thank you, Peter. And see you later, guys. Bye-bye.